Week 5, Understanding God Better. You are not a Jedi yet. I couldn't resist. Sorry for that title. But in Jonah, we do see a prophet here who has some things to learn from a very patient master. This last chapter is an emotional roller coaster. Warren Wiersbe is a pastor and author who has written some great Bible study helps for small group study. In considering the ups and downs of our mighty minor Jonah, he makes a great statement. The will of God will never lead you where the grace of God can't keep you and the power of God can't use you. Right on. That is a statement for anyone following the Lord in faith. It's easy for us to look at Jonah's attitude, failures, and stumbles and snicker at a bumbling prophet. But God didn't see him that way. Jonah was the man for the job, and the job was more than to cry out against the wickedness of Nineveh. The job was also to build up a servant of God who had more to do for God down the road. The job was to return, to tell of the faithfulness of God in the good and bad situations so that you and I today could read it and be encouraged by it. Even prophets are dependent on the good work of God in their lives to do what He's called them to do. The last chapter of Jonah is a great story all by itself. God showed mercy on an enemy people who obeyed His word, and our guy got mad. He prayed, not yelled, to God and let his feelings be known. He also seemed to present God's good character as a liability. Jonah folded his arms and quoted the famous declaration of God in Exodus 34 about his character with a huff and a frowny face. "I knew you'd do this," he said. The mercy of God to these people was not mercy to Jonah. It was evil. Wiersbe once again summed up this part of the story well. For the second time in this account, Jonah prays, but his second prayer was much different in content and intent. He prayed his best prayer in the worst place, the fish's belly, and he prayed the worst prayer in the best place, at Nineveh, where God was working. His first prayer came from a broken heart, but his second prayer came from an angry heart. In his first prayer, he asked God to save him, but in his second prayer, he asked God to take his life. Once again, Jonah would rather die than not have his own way. Wiersbe, Bible Exposition Commentary, Jonah. We shouldn't be so quick to judge, though. Have you acted that way before? I have. I thought I knew the best way and the best outcome and prayed for God to effect that good outcome. That outcome didn't come out like I wanted it to, and I got mad. I got Jonah-itis. I also think that for Jonah, there's something else here. Who knows what had gone on in Jonah's life before this? What we considered earlier may have been some real emotional wounds gained at the hands of the oppression of Assyria. In any case, the biblical record does show that Assyria had not worked in favor of the Jews, but in direct opposition to them. God was very patient with Jonah for a reason. I might be inclined to smack him on the back of the head for his insolent tone. God didn't. He was tender in his words. He understood Jonah's anger on a personal level. The purpose of the book of Jonah seems to find its deepest expression in the relationship of a wounded man of faith with the God who loved him. Jonah built a small shelter away from the city to sit under it and wait for the fireworks of judgment on Nineveh that never came. The desert sun was hot, and God, in his kindness, raised up a plant to shade Jonah. Jonah was happy. God sent a worm to chew that plant until it wilted, and then sent a hot wind to blow against the pouting prophet. Jonah was sad. God knew what was in his heart, and God asked him the same question that he asked Jonah earlier when mercy fell instead of judgment. Quote, "Do you do well to be angry?" Jonah 4:4-9. Jonah didn't answer the first time, but the second time he surely did. One commentator noted that he may very well have used a Jewish expletive in his response. "Yes, I'd do well to be angry, angry enough to die." Oh boy. The last lesson of this book isn't just for Jonah. It's for you and me. God's work in our lives is not arbitrary. It always has purpose in the shaping of His sons and daughters today into the image of His Son, Jesus. Both the plant and the loss of it had purpose beyond what Jonah could see. Has God's road led in a different direction from your own well-thought-out path, or has the outcome not been what you expected? Were you mad? How did God respond to you? God responded to Jonah with a question, and then let Jonah answer for himself. Look at God's response to Jonah's being angry enough to die over God's mercy and the loss of the plant's shade. "And the Lord said, 'You pity the plant for which you did not labor, nor did you make it grow, which came into being in a night and perished in a night. And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle?'" Jonah 4:10-11. So much could be said here, but a large part of this is about expectation. There is an expectation that Jonah had about how God works and who God is. Much to learn had he, as Yoda might say. So do we. Let's look further. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, God didn't see Jonah as the bumbling prophet that we might when reading this book. God was gracious and tender to this man who had obviously suffered a great deal under the hand of those he was called to address. It's proof that we don't have to be perfect for God to work through us and teach us along the way as well. Has there been a time when you flew off the handle in the same way at something that did not work out to your expected outcome, and God had to patiently teach you to trust Him? Expectations. Expectations can be good if they drive us to be better. Expectations can be bad if they are unrealistic or used as a tool against someone. I know one marriage counselor who has soon-to-be married couples do something interesting. He wraps two packages up and writes on the outside of each one, "Expectations," and then has both fiancés walk over to the window, open it up, and throw the packages right out. Sometimes our conceived expectations can blind us from the beauty of the real thing right in front of us. God doesn't always work in the ways we expect Him to. Jonah expected judgment on the people who had made life hard for God's people. He did not expect the mercy of God on them when they changed their ways. He may have expected the mercy and kindness of God upon himself as a faithful Jew when God raised up the plant to comfort him. He may not have expected the removal of that plant and its comfort as a means of God to prepare Jonah's heart for what was next. Placing expectations on God can often end up hurting us. We feel let down by Him because what we expected wasn't what He brought about. He works only for our good. Though we may walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we need not fear because God is with us. He doesn't abandon us or work harm to us. The valleys are not a curse from God. It's often in the valleys where we are open enough to listen to Him because He is with us in them all. God was making a point with the plant. Jonah didn't work to make the plant. God did. The plant was here today, gone tomorrow. Jonah pitied the loss of the plant because he benefited from it. He would not pity the loss of a whole bunch of Assyrians. He did not benefit from them. He did not seem to expect that God would pity their loss either. God didn't benefit from them. They were a cruel and vicious people who did not follow God or His ways, but God did care for them simply because He created them and then gave them opportunity to respond to Him in life-changing ways. God does not always benefit from His image bearers, believers and non-believers alike, to be sure. We can be pretty selfish at times and be of little benefit to God and His design for this world in our thoughts and actions. But His love does not weigh our worth according to how we benefit Him. He loves us because He loves us. That is His character. He loves the sheep that wanders from the fold, so He pursues it. Jesus loved the woman who poured out expensive perfume in an act of humble worship, washing His feet with her tears and drying them with her hair, so He forgave her every offense. Luke 7:36-50. God is consistent in His grace and mercy towards us when we truly seek Him. The value every human life has is intrinsic because that value comes from God Himself. As awful as the Assyrians had been, God did not devalue them. He did speak plainly to them that they need to change their ways. God did not make His image bearers to be cruel because He is not cruel. Even the Assyrians were image bearers. They weren't Jews, but God was calling out to them anyway. Who knows how God was at work among those people to consider Him and how many may have responded in deeper ways to Him? Do we expect God to reach out to the worst and the least of the people around us, or only to the good ones? If God moves in your heart to engage and share His love in Christ with a person who you would be happy to stay away from, will you go to them? Will you hold God's character against Him for wanting the worst people to know His love for them and to give their lives to Him? This leads to another thought. There is something that Jonah did expect. God would act in accordance with His good character. And that fact made Jonah angry in this case. It's personal. The book opened on a personal note between Jonah and God, widened out to consider the mission to wayward people, and then ended on a personal note again between Jonah and God. Look at all of the emotionally charged words in this last chapter of Jonah. Evil, displeased, angry, merciful, slow to anger, abounding in love, exceedingly glad, angry enough to die, pity. All of those words and phrases are emotionally charged. Jonah was responding to God with intense emotional swings from anger to gladness, then back again. God responded with quiet and consistent questions and revelation. God didn't roar at His prophet. He broke down the wall of expectations with tenderness, but also by revealing the emotional baggage that Jonah brought to the party. The last words of the book were a question from God. Just like God was asking Jonah to consider his response to God's mercy, ending on a question now puts the ball in the reader's court. How will we respond? Can we look past ourselves to what God is doing in the world? And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle? Jonah 4:11. I know what a mess I was when God called me to respond in faith. I did not know my right hand from my left in many ways. God's compassion, shown perfectly to us through Jesus, is truly astounding. Jesus came not for the righteous, but to save sinners. The last note of Jonah's prophetic symphony is one of reflection. Should God pity them or not? God's answer was yes. God's story of redemption opens wider through this former rebel prophet to reveal a heart for the whole of his creation in compassion, pity, and mercy. I, for one, am very glad of it. Every now and then, it might be a good idea to write my expectations of God on a bundle and then throw it out the window. Let him be the loving God that he is to the lost and the wayward. He will do amazing things through you to your family, coworkers, friends, and even strangers who need to hear from him through you. Jonah is an encourager for me. I hope he is for you too. We'll pick up this story again several decades later on the timeline in Nahum. You may be surprised at old Jonah. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, God doesn't always work in the ways we expect him to, but he does always work for our good. How might having wrong expectations of God's work become confusing or frustrating? What are some practices that may help release those expectations and to trust God more with outcomes according to his good will?